Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, call 1-800-492-5538. We are joined in studio this hour by folks in United Workers. They've been on the show before when we did our Peabody Award-winning series, Just Words. A number of people in that union who were people cleaning out people you never see because you just walk right past them. We were cleaning what we leave behind in the bathrooms at the stadium. We're guests on this show. And there's an organization that organizes really the poorest of the poor, the most disenfranchised, and who are part-time day workers. They are now embarking on a human rights campaign in the Inner Harbor, which we'll talk about. They are embarking on a really interesting sojourn that we will also cover when a number of six or seven or eight, I'll find the right number when we get on the air here with them, of these workers drove a van down to Florida last week to meet with the Immokalee workers, which is a coalition of Immokalee workers, who are farm workers, and they were making a connection between the workers in the kitchens here and the farm workers there. So this is something really interesting and inspiring, because things like this never get heard in the news, and we're going to talk about it this hour. We're joined by a man who I met once before when we were doing our first Just Words pieces. His name is Luis Larin, who is a leadership organizer with United Workers. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias.
Good to have you here. Ashley Huffnagel is with us, who's a leadership organizer with United Workers. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having us.
And Marilyn Hunter, organizer of United Workers and also translating for Luis during the course of the hour. Good to see you, Marilyn.
Good to be here, Mark. Thank you.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Or you can, that's the best two ways. I haven't written about this on Facebook. You can still jump there if you like to and leave a comment and we'll get it from there. 410-319-8888. I'd like to know what... Let's go to Harbor first. One of the things I found out the other day, Robinson, who's a professor here at Morgan and who does a lot of the activist work, was the really unique nature of the organizing effort going on in the Inner Harbor, which is not the usual. Would you tell us about that?
Well, we've been organizing at the Inner Harbor since last year when we declared the Inner Harbor a human rights zone. And really what we're...
And what does that mean?
Well, essentially, we extended and expanded the living wages victory at Camden Yards to the Inner Harbor. And what we're trying to do is organize all low-wage workers at the Inner Harbor, from workers down at the ESPN Zone to Five Guys to Phillips Seafood, all around economic human rights demands for a right to work with dignity, which includes a living wage, a right to health care, and a right to education.
We are doing because we found a lot of bad situation at the Inner Harbor with the workers. We are talking with a lot of workers about the conditions at the Inner Harbor, and they are talking about really bad condition. That condition that right now is the people see like normal, but that doesn't mean it's acceptable. Like, people don't need to use day and night working really hard to receive poverty wages. That is not acceptable. That is something normal now, but that doesn't mean it's acceptable. And so it's other issues around there, like the wage, like education, and healthcare, and that's why our demands are focused on that three major issues.
So talk a bit about, if you all could, about what is it, what you just said, Luis, what is it that people don't see? You know, people go to the Inner Harbor all the time, either walking through because they work near there, or they're going to get some food, or to buy something, or to go see Santa Claus, whatever it is people want to do at the Inner Harbor, go to the aquarium. And what you're saying, Luis, is what's unseen.
Yes.
I wonder if you could all, you and Ashley, could both kind of describe what it is we don't see. What did you mean by what you were saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't see a lot the people who went to the Inner Harbor. They don't see all the abuses. Like, when I say abuses, I say like, for example, people who are receive a flat rate for work. Like they work 72 hours every week.
72 hours a week?
Yes, say 6 days, 6 days a week. And they receive a flat rate who is under the minimal wage. So that is something that the people don't see. The when the people came to the Inner Harbor and eat and enjoy, they don't see that things. And that is just one of the issues that we found at the Inner Harbor. And also we found a lot of histories of with the workers about sexual favors to get better schedules, to get better wage, to have time off.
Sexual favors from people who are managers demanding sex from women who work there? So which is
basically, yeah. So that is that things we never see that thing when we went to Inner Harbor, but when we went behind, we can found a lot of things going on, and we can see like something is wrong here. You know, because the Inner Harbor is the major attraction from Baltimore City. But at the same time, the people don't see all the things behind and don't see who is running the Inner Harbor. And in this case, the workers are they are working to run in the Inner Harbor because the restaurant is running by workers. You know, if the workers don't do the food or don't do this or the other things, the Inner Harbor is never, the Inner Harbor basically don't exist without workers. So that is things that we saw, that we found behind the Inner Harbor.
Ashley and Marilyn, you can feel free to jump in anytime you'd like as well, please. I mean, what Luis Laran was saying, I mean, let's just take one thing at a time. I mean, that the workers at the Inner Harbor work for less than minimum wage, a flat rate, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
And this is just in one case. I mean, across...
What do you mean in one case?
In one case at one restaurant, we see where workers are being paid a flat rate, regardless of how long they work. So they can work 72 hours and still are paid this flat rate, which would mean that then they're being paid less than the minimum wage. But across the board, there's poverty wages. The Inner Harbor is a poverty zone, and we're trying to transform it into a human rights zone. It's a place that... is dependent on low-wage seasonal work, and we think that we can do better.
And so who are the companies that you're demanding this from?
Well, last time we talked to you, we had just announced the three worst violators.
Right.
So Phillips Seafood, Cheesecake Factory, and M&S Grill. And then on April 18th, when we had our big Human Rights Zone March, we announced who was the worst of the worst and who would be our first target. And we announced that Phillips Seafood was the first target. And we asked, we called for a six-month dialogue for them to sit down with workers and try to resolve the human rights violations happening. But Phillips' response was to ignore this request to sit down face-to-face and instead to intimidate workers, to threaten workers that if they organized, they would shut down the restaurant and move somewhere else. And so we just recently had a Staying on Track retreat bringing together, you know, low-wage workers and workers at the Inner Harbor to discuss what would be the next steps. And what they decided was that this restaurant-by-restaurant strategy was not going to work. If Phillips was any indication of how these other restaurants were going to work, were going to handle this, that it would take forever. And so we decided to go to the top of the profit chain and go after the developers, go after Cordish and GGP to demand that they ensure that human rights are respected at their establishments.
Because why? Because these companies are the ones who own the buildings in the Inner Harbor?
Yeah, they own the Inner Harbor. And so it's like the CIW. The CIW is demanding fair food from some of the major corporate buyers of the tomatoes. And we're doing the same thing, going to the top of the profit chain at the Inner Harbor to demand that they ensure respect and dignity for Inner Harbor workers. And CIW is demanding a penny more per pound from these big corporations like Taco Bell and Burger King and McDonald's, all of which that they've won, you know, this penny more per pound demand. We're doing the same thing. We're demanding that the Inner Harbor developers ensure in their lease agreements with these tenants, the restaurants and the retailers, that they pay a living wage to their employees.
And what is a living wage? How much is a living wage?
It's the state living wage. It's around $11.62, and it keeps on going up each year.
And so it's interesting that you decided to choose that strategy and not organizing all the restaurants and all the restaurant workers. Or are you doing both?
Well, we are organized workers. We continue organize the workers. But the chain is we are not going directly to the restaurant. We are going to, like Ashley said, we are going directly to the top of the profit of chain. So because like a CIW, they are doing this, and they are not against the farm. They are going directly to the Taco Bell, McDonald's, or these other big companies, and they won. So we need to have all these workers together, and like we can do this. We can change the system, the way that the development are right now we are fighting for fair development, because the way like the Inner Harbor are doing is to be a poverty zone, and we need to change that. And that is organize the workers and go directly to the developers and say, this is not fair, and you have all the power and you control everything here and you can change everything. You can say directly to the tenant, change this and change that, because this is not fair and this is not a human right. So that is something, that is why we are organized workers, but at the same time we are going to GGP and college.
So the work that you're doing now, I mean, in the human rights zone, which I find interesting because it's a different way of thinking about how you approach these issues. And what Luis keeps saying is that that the Inner Harbor is a poverty zone, is what you were saying, right? Of course, we don't think of the Inner Harbor as a poverty zone because the Inner Harbor is where all the most expensive shops downtown are, and the poverty zone are.
But the poverty zone is for the workers.
Okay,
that is the thing. If you are working 12 hours each day by 6 days at a week, you want to be available to have a house, to have enough food, to have to cover your expenses to live. But if you work 12 hours, 6 days a week, and you don't have enough to cover that expenses, that is poverty. That is something wrong. That is something against the human rights values.
So there's something going on in this country, I guess we're not even aware of, we're not thinking or talking about it. I mean, when you said 12, I was thinking about it. It was in New Jersey a couple of weeks ago at a 7-Eleven kind of store. It wasn't a 7-Eleven, it was one of those little, you know, kind of stores, picking up one of my kids. And we walked in, and there was a woman who worked there who was from El Salvador. And we started this time, and we're talking to her, and first story we heard was that, well, she couldn't afford to take care of her baby. She had to send them back to El Salvador to be taken care of because she couldn't do it. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, I want to make my kids sure they were safe. And she said, I work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. I said, you work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week? So and you just told me what you just told me, Luis. I mean, so what I think is interesting for us to discover is that there's something going on in America where we're not aware that the lowest wage workers in America are working these hours for very little bit of money, no benefits, no time off, and in sometimes dangerous working conditions. So I mean that's what you're saying is nobody knows this.
Yeah, but at the same time, the change is possible. At the same time, because in my experience, when I came here to the United States, I worked like day labor, and it's a really hard job, you know. Be day labor, you need to wait day by day if you will have work or not. But now I'm a leadership organizer with United Workers, and I saw how the things are changing. And when we reflect also with the CIW model, we can show the change is possible. So at the same time, this is, like you said, this is something that is going on in America. But at the same time, in the other way, the change is, we are creating change. We are building something, a movement to change this this system. Because just because it's something normal or something like more common in America, that doesn't mean it's acceptable. That means it's something growth, and we need to change it, and we need to put the things in the correct way again.
And when I say the unions, the people I've met, this is kind of a diverse union in many ways in terms of the people who are working in the Inner Harbor. I mean, it's when we first met, and then when I met the other people in the union, I mean, it's Latinos from throughout, who come originally from throughout South America, throughout Central America and Mexico. There are a lot of African Americans in this union who are working in the Inner Harbor, some and white workers as well. This is a real mix of people, which I think we also don't understand, because it's people always say it's hard to get to cross the kind of racial divide, mm-hmm. especially, I say, between Latino workers and black workers. But tell us about that experience in the United Workers.
Well, something is the race, but at the same time, the same problems unite the people, because they have the same problems. Doesn't matter if you are white, if you are African-American, or if you are Latino. Everyone have the same issues. Everyone have the same pay. Everyone have the same problems. Anyone have any benefit. So when you talk with all these workers and explain how this how everyone is in the same with the same problems, they see the necessity of being united and fight together, because the divisions is something that the boss use to maintain the control, to keep the control of the workers, because that is something, is a tool really useful for maintain everyone working alone, you know. But when everyone come together, the things change. And we saw that in the Staying on Track retreat that Ashley told before. The workers came together, Latinos, African-Americans, and whites, and they said, definitely we need to do something. And we tried to talk with Phillips, and they don't want to hear anything about us. So what is the next step that we can take? But and that decision, we take with all the workers, not just with Latino, not just with African American, not just white people. If not, all the workers came together and think, and they decide to do something different. So that is how it works in United Workers, because everyone see the not the difference, they what is similar, you know. Because the difference, everyone know what is the difference, but they don't know what they have in common. So when they came together and they talk about, oh, my experience in my restaurant is the experience in my restaurant is the same like you, but I am white and you are Latino or you are African American, so we need to do something, because I'm in another restaurant and I'm have the same issues that you. So that is how works the unity between workers.
And I mean, I guess it's to hear these stories, it's important for people when they sit down to have their crab cake or their hamburger or their slice of cheesecake, not knowing what's going on behind the scenes.
Definitely. I mean, consumers are a big part of what helped win a lot of the campaigns for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. It was getting students and consumers involved that really pushed Taco Bell and Burger King and McDonald's to come to the table with farm workers. It wasn't that they were concerned about the plight of farm workers. They were concerned about their brand image, that they were being associated with poverty wages and sweatshop conditions in the fields. And this is what, you know, what we need to do at the Inner Harbor. You know, it's the Baltimore's main attraction. It's our city, and it brings in all these tourists and consumers. And when tourists and consumers get wind of that, you know, that behind the scenes, there's poverty wages, lack of benefits, you know, all these human rights abuses happening, it changes the image of that. And that's really a powerful tool that the Coalition of Immokalee Workers has used and that we can use as well to bring Cordish and GGP and the developers to the table.
Well, when you keep talking about these developers, though, and I know some of the men who run some of these companies as well, I mean, what can they do? I mean, how can they impose their will on people who are their tenants? I don't see how they could legally say to a tenant, you can't have a restaurant here unless you pay $9 an hour or $11 an hour. How could they do that?
Well, they require a lot of things in their lease agreements in order for them to be able to rent space from the Inner Harbor. And so they can require that they treat their workers with respect and dignity through their lease agreements. I mean, the Inner Harbor is a place that's dependent on low-wage seasonal work. You know, if that's where we're investing our money and our public money, well, we should say the public money should go towards a public benefit, public good. You know, it shouldn't go towards private gain and towards lining the pockets of developers and millions of dollars while workers are suffering.
Well, you just said something about, I mean, that's a part of this conversation, which is that the development of places like the Inner Harbor and other places like that are done with public money, or done with our tax dollars and giving write-offs to companies so they can build, and promises of jobs and the rest that come with it. That to me is almost one of the strongest arguments I hear. This is our public money, and if we're going to use public money, then there should be some protection for the people who
sure. I mean, there was a lot of promises when the Inner Harbor was built that it was going to be replacing all these lost manufacturing jobs, and that it was the new service sector, and it was going to be providing living wage jobs. You know, people really believed that. And then, you know, what we've seen since then is completely the opposite. And so we need to shine a light on that, reflect it back, and say, remember these promises. Remember, you know, what the Inner Harbor was supposed to be held up to be.
So where are you with all this now? How close are you to where you want to be?
Well, so we just announced on November 6th, I believe, through a theatrical skit illustrating the Inner Harbor profit chain, that we were asking the, you know, that the developers come to the table and ensure human rights standards at the Inner Harbor. And actually, along kind of leading us into the Fair Food Solidarity Tour, one of the actions that we did was on Human Rights Day, while we were, the first day we were down in Immokalee, Florida, was delivered the letter, you know, went to the post office to mail the letter off to the GGP, outlaying who we are, you know, what we're asking for, and what we're demanding from them.
So one of the things I heard from some of the other day was that the United Workers in Baltimore are studying the Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States.
He was talking about Howard Zinn, the People's History. You're in the Poverty Scholars Program. Do you want to talk a little bit about?
Oh, yeah, sure. We are reading this book because the people who live here in the United States, and also we, immigrants, we never know the truth. We read something, and everything seems like fine, you know? Everything seems like, wow, this war needs because this government need to do this because, and everything seems like fine. Everything is correct. But when we saw a little bit more in depth, we can find how different the history is. And that is something that the people who are part of this program, they are saying. People who live here and who receive education here, and they said, well, when I was in the school, they never told about this. They never tell me about this other thing. They never tell me about how the things was, you know. So that helped a lot in the way to create more reflection and create more conscience in the people and be more know more about our history. Also help to us to create our future. If we know our past, we can create better future. And that is something that is great to us to read that book.
And I was just going to say that, just like Luis is talking about having to know our past in order to create this new future, I mean, Howard Zinn has been incredibly depicted these histories that haven't been told. And so that's been really inspiring for us, because one of the things that we're getting ready to do is have this Justice Theater Conference that's going to prepare us for this community-wide participation play on our Harbor Day, which is a retelling of the people's history, you know, a people's history of human rights struggle. So that's just part of our research to begin developing these plays for this action that we're doing.
We're going to hear about that when we come back from this break and more, and ask our listeners to join us here at 410-319-8888 as we talk with a group that is not covered very much in Baltimore. And we will come back to this subject with them as well the next several weeks after the holiday, and ask some of the companies that are talking about to join us on the air with them and see if we can't get a community dialogue going here about all this. We'll be back with Luis Lauren and Ashley Hufnagel and Marilyn Hunter, and we'll be introduced to Oscar Otsoy, who's leader of the Coalition of Imolke Workers in Florida that they went to visit, the CIW. 410-319-8888 is the number here. In on this conversation. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop at one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are joined in studio this hour by folks from the United Workers who are doing some really interesting, different kind of organizing in this community. Luis Lauren is with us, and Luis is leadership organizer with United Workers. We met when we started our Just Words project, and we contacted United Workers and did stories on the men and women who work in that union. Ashley Hufnagel is leadership organizer with United Workers. Marilyn Hunter is an organizer of the United Workers and translating here today, if Luis should need it, but so far he's fine. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're joined now also by, no, he's not on the phone yet? Okay, we're working on getting him on the phone. We will be joined by Oscar Otsoy, who's leader of the, he's there, okay, great, Coalition of Imolke Workers, CIW, in Florida. And Oscar, welcome, good to have you with us. Is Oscar there?
It's probably some translation.
Sí, bienvenido, Oscar.
Muchas gracias. Gracias por darnos la oportunidad de tener esta entrevista desde aquí de Florida.
Thanks a lot for inviting us and being able to be on the phone here from Florida.
This is a pleasure to have you here with us.
Es un placer tenerlos en
vivo. El placer es mío también.
The pleasure is mine.
So it's interesting to me that we have, Natasha Noriega is the translator joining us also from Florida.
That's right.
Yes. This is what's a very unique thing that just happened between the United Workers and the CIW in Florida. As I said, you know, one of the things we talked about at the beginning of the top of the last hour was when you looked at what was going on in Copenhagen, you saw 100,000 activists from across the globe. Many people of color from Africa, Asia, Latin America, people from all over Europe and America, gathering together, an incredible scene. But in one way, what you're doing is playing this out. The idea that local grassroots organizing among the poorest people in our community is going on in Baltimore with the people who cook the food, clean the floors in restaurants, and people who are picking the food that ends up in our restaurants. This is pretty groundbreaking. So let me ask Oscar first how this came about from their end.
Just a brief intervention. Is it going to be too much if I'm, like, transferring while you're speaking? I think it might make it quicker.
Sure.
Because right now I'm going to have to recap, and then I'll ask you a question.
Go ahead, recap, and go ahead.
Okay. Me sigue fascinante ver que ahora en Copenhagen hay tantos representantes de todo el mundo y que ahora se ve en Estados Unidos como esa misma solidaridad entre varios grupos, pero también que los mismos trabajadores más pobres están organizando, los que preparan comida, los que cosechan comida, por ejemplo, los de Baltimore y también los de Mocali. Y ahora iba a hacer una pregunta. So, you can ask a question.
So, how did this, from your end in Florida, how did this come about? This communication and coalition between United Workers and CIW.
Pregunta de qué manera esta alianza, la comunicación entre los trabajadores unidos y la coalición se inició.
¿En cuánto se inició?
Pero de qué manera, cómo empezamos a compartir.
Ah, bueno, sí. Una manera en que pudimos empezar a compartir con trabajadores unidos es que ellos también supieron de la lucha que tenemos como trabajadores agrícolas desde aquí de la Florida y compartir un poco de las experiencias que tenemos dentro de los campos y también saber un poco de cómo ellos se empezaron a organizar desde allá de Baltimore.
Natasha?
Yeah, so it's been an extensive alliance between the two organizations, and it started off with United Workers in Baltimore finding out about our cause, our work in agricultural fields, and seeing that link between like the harvesting of food itself, but also working in like the restaurant industry.
Y pienso que para las dos organizaciones, como para Trabajadores Unidos y como para la coalición que está aquí en Immokalee, Florida, es muy importante las dos campañas, tanto como en el lado de ellos, por el lado de nosotros, que estamos mejorando las condiciones y salarios que trabajadores hemos estado recibiendo con más de 30 años.
And I think that for both organizations, United Workers and the Coalition, we're demonstrating that we are making a dent, that we are improving conditions for not only workers and like the restaurant service industry, but also workers in the field.
So what do you all expect to get out of this? I mean, it's in one level I can see where it's groundbreaking. You know, workers in the urban area meeting workers in the rural area, coming together from both sides of the table, literally. But what do you expect to come out of this?
Well, we expect the solidarity. We expect the workers feel what solidarity means. And one way to do this was some powerful moment when a worker from the Inner Harbor shake the hand of the worker from Florida. Because this worker from Florida, he picked the tomato. And this worker from the Inner Harbor, he put the tomato into a hamburger. And they never met before. But they use the same tomatoes. And when these two hands is shake are together, or they are together for pray, that is a powerful moment. Because they can feel like I'm exploited in a big city in Baltimore. But my coworker here, he also is exploited in Florida, in the fields. And the same thing, the worker from Florida can feel about the worker at the Inner Harbor. So that is more powerful than a lot of words, you know, because they can feel solidarity and they can stand in together and they can say, I know what I know how the exploitation feels. And I'm ready to stand in solidarity with this struggle, with the Fair Food campaign, and also with the Fair Development campaign. Because we are in the same level. In different ways, we are looking for justice, we are looking for human rights, and we're fighting for better conditions for all the workers. We are fighting for the human rights for the workers. And the CIW, they are fighting for human rights with the workers in the tomato fields.
Go back to our guests in Florida. Natasha Noriega, I heard you were translating as we were going on. I heard that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Thank you. And we're also, Oscar Atsoy is with us as a leader of the coalition of the Umolke Workers CIW in Florida. Could Oscar, tell the people here in Baltimore about, A, what the conditions are. Let's start there. Let me just start there so we can just break it up. Tell us about the conditions that the workers work on and the workers live like in Florida in those fields.
¿Quiere que le cuentes a la gente de Baltimore sobre las condiciones en los campos? ¿Qué es trabajar en Florida o en Immokalee? ¿Cuáles son las condiciones de los campos?
Bueno, como siempre, las condiciones en que un trabajador agrícola vive dentro de los campos es lo más difícil que uno puede experimentar dentro de una industria que, más que todo, es tan, tan grande. Y que se puede observar trabajadores trabajando, viviendo en condiciones muy difíciles.
The experience of working in the field is one of the most difficult and backbreaking, in essence.
Difícil es cuando se puede hablar de que muchas veces un trabajador está dentro de los campos, le gritan, lo amenazan, le roban su salario, le pegan muchas veces. Esto son casos como, son abusos que un trabajador recibe dentro de esta industria.
It's difficult not only in the sense that it is backbreaking, but also that verbal abuse is common. There's also frequent wage theft and also beatings and threats.
Beatings and threats?
Dijo amenazas y golpizas.
Sí, exactamente.
What kind of beatings and threats?
¿Qué tipo de golpizas o amenazas?
En estos años, amenazas como de parte del patrón, ¿sabes qué? No te pago tu salario. No vas a tener tu salario si no le vas a echar ganas como los otros. Tipo de amenazas de estos. En los años pasados hubieron golpizas de trabajadores dentro de esta industria.
It's common for the threats to be a way of encouraging or propelling more productivity. So if you don't, a grower will say, or a crew leader, if you don't pick as much as the harvester or picker next to you, you know, I'm going to deduct from your piece rate, your wage, or also threaten with hitting.
And I guess another thing very quickly to talk about is what earlier in our show Ashley was describing, the deal that you forced on Taco Bell and Burger King and other places.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I didn't get the question.
Talk just briefly about the deal that you, I said forced, but got cut with, Burger King, Taco Bell, and others. What was that about, and how did that relate to your work?
¿Cómo ha sido el acuerdo que se firmó con Taco Bell, Burger King y McDonald's, y cómo se relaciona eso a nuestro trabajo, y también cómo limita o disminuye las amenazas, las golpizas?
Sí, básicamente son campañas que hemos tenido desde los años pasados. Esta campaña que inició que en el 2001, que fue por comida justa, y fue precisamente con Taco Bell que finalmente logramos reunirnos con esta cadena de supermercado de comida rápida, que hizo también que aceptaran ellos un código de conducta donde haya un centavo más por cada libra de tomate que ellos están comprando de aquí de las de los grandes ranchos de aquí de Imócali precisamente, y también estábamos pidiendo allí que ellos acepten un código donde haya cero tolerancia en la esclavitud, porque en esta industria han existido 7 casos de esclavitud. Más estamos pidiendo la participación de los trabajadores. Estamos pidiendo que haya voz de los trabajadores de esta industria.
So the agreements that have been signed with, for example, Taco Bell, McDonald's, and Burger King were the result of several campaigns beginning in 2001 with the Taco Bell boycott. And the components of the agreement are a code of conduct that has a zero tolerance policy of slavery, because there have been 7 cases of modern-day slavery in the field of Florida, and also a penny per pound premium, so a wage increase that addresses stagnant wages for 30 years. And that goes hand in hand with addressing this power that growers and crew leaders have over workers and the way that they're able to threaten with wage theft, for example.
Let me open the phone to you and people join this conversation. Natasha and Oscar, how long do you have to stay with us?
Like a maximum of 20 minutes?
Okay, we should be done by then. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking with folks from the United Workers here in Baltimore City about their kind of very unique story, what they're doing, fighting for human rights here in Baltimore, organizing restaurant workers in the Inner Harbor that they call a poverty zone, trying to create a human rights zone. And we're joined in studio by Louis Larin, who is a leadership organizer with United Workers, Ashley Huffnagel, a leadership organizer as well with United Workers, Bella Hunter, who works with United Workers, and on the phone, Oscar Atsoy, who's a leader of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, CIW in Florida, who's just talking about how they organize there, and Natasha Noriego, who's translating for him in Florida. 410-319-8888 is number here, and they're on because this very unique meeting took place between the restaurant workers here in Baltimore and the farm workers in Florida. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Leo.
This is Leo. I want to say to your United Workers, we all commend you for standing up for what's right and for justice, thank God. And we want to know, on a practical level, what we can do, what you recommend we do in specific terms with regard to the involvement of the City Council of Baltimore and the Greater Baltimore Committee and the governor of this state, all of whom know what's going on. Don't think for a moment they don't know what's going on. They know what's going on. But now that we, the citizens, are more aware as a result of your efforts, what are you specifically recommending that we do to ensure that the political establishment supports your efforts?
Well, Leo, one thing that you could do is write to your city council person and the mayor and let them know that you're really concerned about the issues going down at the Inner Harbor. So that's one way that you could let them know that you're a citizen of Baltimore and you're really concerned. And then there's many other ways that people can get involved and participate with the United Workers. One that I mentioned before was we have a Justice Theater Conference that's coming up, which is going to be a workshop on theater to prepare us for our Harbor Day, which is a community-wide participation play. So we need people to be actors in this retelling of the people's history. So that's another way that you can be a part of it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Leo.
Because this slave labor matter and the freedom with which the rich developers get away with murder and don't pay taxes has everything to do with why they're closing firehouses and why Baltimore City doesn't have any money to do the things it's supposed to. We've got to make justice a reality.
Leo, good to hear from you.
Praise God.
Leo, by the way, is a man I've known. I haven't seen him in a long time, but it turns out he found our show and we have found each other. We were civil rights workers together here in Baltimore back 40 odd years ago when I was a very young person. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. So I'm also interested with, very quickly, Ashley, the idea that you're using theater, that theater is part of this strategy and struggle that you're using.
Yeah, and this is another strategy that we've really looked to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers for. I mean, they've used theater not only in the community organizing, because, I mean, they can talk a little bit more about how mm-hmm. they use it, but also in their actions, putting on these really dramatic theatrical actions. And so we've seen that to be a really successful way of sort of articulating what's going on and the conditions and what. So we want to do this community-wide participation play on our Harbor Day to begin retelling the people's history of struggle and human rights, struggles not just down at the Inner Harbor, but our whole history of struggles. And so we're having a Justice Theater Conference on January 16th at 2640, and it's going to be a day-long workshop of on theater of the oppressed, street theater, puppet making, all to prepare us for this this grand undertaking. So
Oscar, could you tell us how you use theater in organizing and working in Florida among the farm workers?
¿Puedes contarnos cómo se usa el teatro cuando se organiza con la coalición y también en las acciones?
Sí, básicamente como lo que es el teatro aquí en la comunidad, una manera para dar mejor el mensaje a toda la comunidad, como una manera de que en qué momento estamos o en qué momento de las campañas estamos las diferentes maneras para hacer entender a nuestra comunidad, de qué manera corporaciones grandes que tienen un poder grande para hacer cambiar las condiciones en que vivimos los trabajadores, tienen ese poder para cambiar, pero que no lo están haciendo, y una manera para que los trabajadores entendamos de qué manera nos están explotando es como mostrar en forma de mímicas o de teatros, en este caso.
The use of theater is used not only in Immokalee, but also when we do actions. For example, the most recent one in Tallahassee in front of Governor Chris, in Gainesville. And it essentially just reduces sort of like the major themes into code. So it's a lot of use of popular education mm-hmm. to convey, especially the community in Immokalee, say, like, who the players are and what the struggle is.
So, I mean, I think this is something that is kind of unique in this era. I mean, it was something that was used, especially in some other places where theater was used in this kind of organizing, was used here in America, well, in the 60s as well, but back in the 30s and 40s. But this is kind of an interesting approach here. So you intend to use this... The United Workers in Baltimore are using this theatrical approach to both organizing and for people to see who may be tourists and just citizens in the Inner Harbor?
So we start to do the theater. Like Ashley said, to announce the new phase of the campaign, we did a skit to explain and to show how the Inner Harbor works. Who is in the top of the profit chain. And we did with the participation of the workers. So the workers did the skit, and they play everything. And they was the workers and the bosses and also the developers, because they know exactly how the Inner Harbor works. So we are starting using, and also on Philadelphia and the other property of Cordish, we did the same skit. So we are starting, but I think Ashley can explain a little bit more what is the next steps to use the theater.
Well, I mean, like Luis was saying, we're starting now, and going on this Fair Food Solidarity Tour, one of the major things that we wanted to learn from the CIW was how they use theater in their organizing.